As a pastor of 20 years in Louisiana, I think I'm particularly qualified to be shocked at the audacity of my next guest. At extraordinarily high personal cost, Jerry DeWitt has gone from serving as a fundamentalist faith leader to founder of a chapel serving humanist and atheist persons, all without leaving the intensely conservative and intensely Christian community of Lake Charles, Louisiana. Now, there's no question that the very notion of church for non-believers makes many who claim traditional religions intensely uncomfortable. To that, without any malice, I say, good. Too often there's a subtle subcontext in American religion that could be described as what's good enough for me should be good enough for thee. More broadly, enforced conformity is not hard to find, especially in the South. So I'm eager to meet a man who is following a vocation with no instruction manual in such an unlikely place. Jerry DeWitt, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I hope I can live up to such a wonderful introduction.
I just want to get clear right here at the very beginning. St. Charles has not become a hotbed of liberalism, has it?
No, it certainly hasn't. And as a matter of fact, I actually live an hour north of Lake Charles, Louisiana, in DeRidder, which is maybe even more conservative, yeah, and of course much, much smaller.
What led you to such a dramatic transition?
I have lived in and around the DeRidder, Lake Charles area all my life. I'm now 44 years of age. And so at age 17, I was saved at Jimmy Swaggart's Church in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I immediately went into the ministry, the denomination of my grandparents, which was Pentecostal. Matter of fact, we prided ourselves on being holier than Pentecostals and referred to ourselves as apostolics. And so for the next 25 years, one degree or the other, I was in the ministry, sometimes evangelizing, sometimes pastoring, and I even added to my public service working at City Hall in DeRidder, Louisiana. I started off as the code enforcement officer and later on ended up being the mayor's chief of staff and the director of community service. I pastored two different churches as the senior pastor. I was the associate pastor for several different churches and spent about 10 years on the highways and byways evangelizing within a very, very strict Pentecostal denomination.
What happened that triggered even the thought of stepping out of that tradition and embracing atheism?
I left Christianity and the ministry in particular kicking and screaming. I did not want to leave. I was not looking to leave. I fought for years intellectually. I fought with my conscience. I fought with the doctrine for years in order to try to stay, in order to maintain a place within my community and within my church world. So the very first catalyst for change was all the way back at the very beginning of my ministry when it became my responsibility to preach the doctrine of eternal punishment and hell. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I took very seriously. And what I like to say is that it's been my love for truth, my love for humanity, and at the time, my love for the God that I was brought up believing in that forced me to consider these issues and over time to change my worldview so substantially that it would have to literally change my world as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to convey any implicit sense of superiority about a position, but
sure.
Do you think that being in the fundamentalist tradition caused you to react with a strength that might not have been there had you been in a more progressive position?
Absolutely. I was taught to take things, and this is, now I'm going to sound like I'm being superior or egotistical in some way, but I was taught to take things extremely seriously and to attempt to bring the God of the Bible into my everyday life, not just a Sunday morning experience, not some type of mixture of worldviews or philosophies as we see in a lot of modern forms of Christianity, but to try to relive, to try to enact the very dedication and the lifestyle of the apostles themselves. That's mm-hmm. why we called ourselves apostolic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, that definitely forced me to live a very particular kind of life.
Jerry, tell me, how far have you changed, or how much have you changed?
This is the way that I like to describe it. I developed a little creed as soon as I began to tour within the secular movement. I quickly learned that different groups call themselves by different names, and I've always sought unity anywhere that I could find it. So what I say is, I say that skepticism is my nature.
Hmm.
That makes me a skeptic, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That free thought is my methodology.
Mm-hmm.
That agnosticism is my conclusion. And the way that I like to phrase that is that after 25 years of being in the ministry, I have more questions than answers.
Hmm.
So agnosticism is my conclusion. Then atheism is my opinion. It's
mm-hmm.
simply an opinion that I hold at this time. But lastly, and most importantly, humanism is my motivation. And what I realized was I had actually been a humanist all along.
Yeah.
So I don't feel any different than I felt when I was in the ministry. Obviously, I do not believe in theistic
mm-hmm.
Belief systems
right.
anymore, but I still consider myself to be the same loving person that I always was.
Now, how have the people who've known you all of these other years treated you since you have announced where you are now?
You know, it's ranged from being completely disowned by family and friends. I've even had threats, different types of physical threats at different times, usually by strangers, not by, you know, the polite people of the South, all the way to sympathy. You know, people don't realize that sometimes it actually sounds insulting when they find out about your change of beliefs and they say, "Well, I love you anyway," as if you've been convicted of a crime and they're going to love you anyhow. So the reaction has varied. But in the South, I really feel as if there's a silent yet polite hostility. It seems as if the way that most people are handling it is by attempting to ignore it. You know, every time that I get a little bump in the media, or Community Mission Chapel gets a bump in the media, then social media will have its day
mm-hmm.
for a little while, and then it all quietens back down into, as I call it, a polite hostility.
But they do love you.
But they do love me anyway. Yeah, as if I'm a convicted child molester or something.
That's
you know,
right.
which speaks towards one of the reasons that I refused to move, because I felt as if I was being treated as if I had done something wrong. I was 17 years old whenever I started in the ministry. If I didn't make changes by the time that I was 42, something would have been wrong. And so I felt like to move was almost like a plea bargain, you know, almost like pleading guilty so that you can have probation instead of going to court.
Yeah.
And I felt like that wasn't the appropriate thing to do.
You know, Jerry, of all of what you've said, the thing that I found most difficult to understand was why you didn't move, because
right.
I know it has to be uncomfortable.
It is, and it is uncomfortable. It's limiting. It's a strange experience. I embedded myself in the community. I love my little town. Like I said earlier, I've even worked at City Hall, and so it's awkward. There's no doubt. It's awkward being a stranger in your own community,
mm-hmm.
but every day it gets a little better. Every day more doors open up. Every day someone meets me who hasn't seen me since all of this has happened, and they're surprised to see that I'm the same person I've always been. Every day I'm recapturing this sense of community and love that I had for 25 years with my town.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Tell us about the chapel. Where did the idea come from for Community Mission Chapel, and what's it been like?
Community Mission Chapel is wonderful. We're still just really getting it going. We haven't yet met nearly any of the goals that we're looking forward to. But basically what happened, December the 1st, 2011, I was fired from a job that I had taken in order to remove myself from the ministry, trying to commit what I call identity starvation, But unfortunately, I was outed. Everything got in a turmoil. It all made the papers and such, and I had to commit identity suicide. Mm-hmm. But as I began to tour in the secular movement, what I quickly realized was just my mannerisms alone seemed to people as if I was preaching. And there was a few people that were bothered by it. They'd been traumatized in some type of fundamentalist church. But by and large, people who had come up in the same background that I had been raised in, they felt a sense of closure by hearing someone speak, not just in a Southern way, but in more of a preaching style. And so I paid attention to that over the course of the last 2 years as I've traveled, and I realized that there is a nostalgic need within many of the lives of secular people, particularly those who are in the South. Mm-hmm. They're looking for that same sense of community. They're looking for those same cultural elements that they were raised to appreciate, but they're looking for them without the mythology and without the institutionalism of religion. And so I was actually asked by people who were part of a free thought group in Lake Charles, Louisiana, if I would be interested in starting a secular congregation.
My goodness. How has the community reacted, just letting you be in the chapel, or have they been pretty negative to you?
Actually, initially, they were very negative. Every time that we make the news again, there'll be just a bombardment of negativity, mm-hmm. generally through social media. They've even went as far as warning other churches that we're out to steal their children somehow, some way. I don't know what we'd do with all of them if we were to steal them, but we're supposed to be stealing them. Yeah. And so, but we're going out of our way in order to show that this is actually an act of love, that we're trying to love ourselves, love people who are like us, love people who've experienced the same outcasting that we've experienced, and at the same time, love our community by presenting this option.
Why do you think people have such a hard time understanding atheism and the fact that values, purpose, and a hunger for community can all exist outside of religious faith?
Well, I think first off, we're trained through our experience, our life experience, and our predominant culture within the United States to mix these values together, that the value of family, the value of tradition, all mixes with the value of church or religion or synagogue. And so it's not often in our particular culture at this time in American history that we divide those out. And so when we do begin to divide those out and say, well, you can keep your religious traditions, but we're also going to have family values, then that runs contrary to the idea that you are not able to get family values without first getting them from a creator, getting them from some type of, you know, religious sacred document, that you're not able to generate those values within yourself. Where will you get them if you don't get them from the sacred text? Yeah. And that's the confusion that has been created within our culture. So obviously there are ways of getting them, and we have them instinctively, internally, naturally. We have the same love for family that anyone who takes their family to church every Sunday has.
I've got two questions I need you to answer very succinctly, if you will. What's the status of the documentary film about your work, The Outcast of Beauregard Parish?
We're still filming. As a matter of fact, a couple of the producers are in town this week. They hope to interview a few other folks. We're still filming, and hopefully the movie will be released next year.
And I know your book now is out, Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Faith to Atheism. What could a reader look for in that?
What they're going to do is they're going to live our lives. The way that we wrote the memoir, the narrative that we've created, takes you step by step, almost day for day, through the life and the experience of a Pentecostal evangelist and a Pentecostal pastor, the ups, the downs, the trials, the sacrifices that are made when a person is trying to live for God with literally everything that they have.
Is there such a thing as a Pentecostal atheist?
As a Pentecostal atheist? You know, there probably will be before it's over. I'm excited about seeing all the changes and the openness that people have. There's Metacostals now, so if there can be Metacostals, maybe there can be Pentecostal atheists.
Well, Jerry, what have you learned through this whole process?
I have learned, first and foremost, the necessity of loving yourself. That if you don't love yourself the way that you really should love yourself, then it's going to be impossible for you to love your neighbor appropriately.
Jerry DeWitt's story is one of courage and conviction, and most importantly, of liberation. He's the founder of the Secular Community Mission Chapel in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and he is the author of Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Faith to Atheism.
I recommend it, and I equally recommend the audiobook because I read it. And so what more could you ask for?
Good.
My story in my own voice.
Well, Jerry, I admire your courage, and it's been very insightful for me and I think for our listeners to hear you. I thank you so much for being with us here on State of Belief Radio.
The pleasure was all mine.